You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Second, be sure and put your clocks back tomorrow for those of you in the daylight savings time situation. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm coming to you from the cold Chicago suburbs. I appreciate you joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. You may visit my website at spingola.com, where you may access the radio schedule page. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left-hand side of the page, and if you wish to ask questions or make comments during this program, email comment at spingola.email. And this address is only used 3 hours a week. So if you email me during the week and then get mad at me because I don't respond, it's because I only look at this email address 3 hours a week. You may join others in the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And, of course, the archives are at SpingolaSpeaks.net and RepublicBroadcasting.org. My guest for the first hour and a half today is J.B. Williams. His website is PatriotsUnion.org. J.B., welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna. I'm sorry. It's good to be with you today.
Oh, I'm really happy that you joined us. Okay, so what is your real name?
Well, I'm running out of aliases, it would seem. My real name is Jim. My mother called me James, but only when I was in trouble. My brothers and sisters call me Jim, but I wrote under JB just originally years ago. I started writing under that, not to hide, but so that I would know why someone was contacting me by what they called me. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I've been trying to figure it out. I thought, okay, it's probably James. So I was right.
Yes.
All righty. Yes. Okay, you write about history, American politics. You have 3,000 pieces published over a 20-year period, which is incredible. You are the co-author of a recently released book, excuse me, Trumped, The New American Revolution. Excuse me. And that was published with Timothy Harrington. Your recent article is about kids, children who kill. So tell us about that article.
Well, first I want to tell you, you know, after, it was actually closer probably to 30 years of writing columns, but I lost track, so I'd just say more than 20. And I actually stopped writing columns altogether in September of 2017 for a number of reasons we can discuss if you want. But when the El Paso and Ohio shootings took place, I just couldn't be quiet. And so 2 years later, after stopping writing columns, I wrote one more column, and it's the one that you called to discuss today. And that is why U.S. children are killing themselves and each other. And I don't think it's for any of the reasons that we hear about on MSNBC or CNN or even half the time Fox News. So yeah, I had left writing columns for a couple of years, after a long run, and it's only the advent of these more recent mass shootings that caused me to come out of the retirement room and write another column. But go ahead.
Okay, let's start. And initially, there were people who said that Sandia, which I took a particular interest in, was a hoax, and they started saying that within 12 hours. Oh, which is ridiculous. It's preposterous. And I did write a book about it. You wrote, about El Paso, El Paso, Texas Walmart, and you wrote about Dayton, Ohio, nightclub. And, you talk about, gun-free zones, and, you talk about the disturbed youth, and you also mention suicide, children committing suicide every year. 47,000 a year in the United States alone, which is very troubling, that children feel so hopeless that they take their own lives. And then, of course, you mentioned that they're also killing other people. And you say that the Democrats look at mass shootings and then associate it with private gun ownership, and that they want to disarm everyone, because, well, if a person uses a gun to kill somebody, and of course recently we've had people use cars, so are they going are they going to take cars away? What about people who use knives? Are they going to take knives away? It takes somebody holding that weapon, or driving that weapon, to actually commit the murders. And so, that's not a real good idea, unfortunately, there are only really five entities that are giving out information, where we used to have, well, quite a few entities, radio stations and television networks and stations. Went from 87 back during the Reagan era down to what we now have is five. And the ownership, you could watch any state, any program, any station, and get the same news. So, of course, our news has been programmed. We are being programmed. And so a lot of people, the people who just never thought about this before, are now ready to say, oh, gosh, we better take these guns away because look what they're doing. And it's really unfortunate. So.
I would, in the column, you probably noticed, and so on radio too, I want to give this disclaimer up front as we discuss, you know, what is a very serious topic. And state for the record, I'm not a doctor, or I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist or a child behavioral specialist or a, forensic criminal, criminology specialist or any of those things. I'm very much the average, I think, anyway, very much an average American. I grew up one of six kids, with a mother and father who were present, and a grandfather actually who lived with us also. A World War I veteran. My father was Korean War. And I grew up on a farm, and it was very common in this farming community. community that I grew up in. For, you know, from high school up, for kids to carry weapons in their vehicles to and from school, because, not because they were going to shoot anybody at school, but because they were going hunting before school or after school. So I had been around guns my whole life growing up on a farm. It was very common for most of my friends growing up that I played football with and other things growing up, for them to have weapons, and nobody ever shot anybody during those time frames. And so I'm watching what's going on out there in the world today, and I'm very aware, as most people should be, that someone who is intent upon killing someone or killing a number of people or killing a mass number of random individuals, there's a multitude of ways to accomplish that goal if that's your goal. And so for me, the question wasn't so much which weapon of choice was someone using to harm themselves or someone else. It's why are we seeing what appears to be an increasing regularity of children, young people who want to harm themselves or someone else? And I think there's numerous reasons for that, none of which is associated with gun ownership.
Right.
You know, again, the issue of, and I come at all this from a common sense standpoint more than any other, I think. And of course there's a few years on me, so some experience as well, and some, hopefully some wisdom over those years, about things like this and other things about life. So hopefully I come at it all from that angle and not from a clinical PhD angle. But at the end of the day, I found it highly disturbing how many children in the United States, the greatest country ever known to mankind, the freest nation, even though we're not as free as we once were or as free as we should be, but still yet the freest, most prosperous nation on earth. What is it that is causing these young people to want to harm themselves or others? I think that is an issue that needs to be dealt with much more so than what mechanism they may choose to do that.
Right. Well, I grew up with guns also. I went skeet shooting as a child. I'm not a goat. As a child, I went skeet shooting. And everybody had a gun. It was just an automatic thing. Everybody had a gun. I remember going to school and seeing guns, as you say, in the other people's trucks, in the back of their truck. And it was just common. I grew up in the West, and everyone that I knew owned a gun, and it was just normal, natural. I don't know that my father ever locked up his guns in any gun safe. I don't even know if I knew where they were. But certainly, it's just, it was just ordinary.
Well, you know, my brothers, I have three brothers and two sisters, and my grandfather, the World War One vet, my grandfather, one Christmas, bought all four of us boys our first shotgun for hunting. And I think our ages at the time probably ranged from probably 8 to 13 years of age. And to not leave anyone out, all four of us got one at Christmas time. And we were all taught the proper care and control of that weapon, what it's for, what it's not for, and the proper use of it. And so it was never, and that's kind of the way it was at that time for probably most kids, whether it's the East or the West or the South. You know, if you grew up in a somewhat rural area, you probably hunted or skeet shooted or any number of these things. I mean, my grandfather used to take us everything from deer hunting to pheasant hunting, quail hunting, mm-hmm. and rabbit hunting and squirrel hunting. And, you know, it was just commonplace. And so it wasn't unusual. And nobody, you know, throughout the years growing up, whether it was grade school, middle school, high school. I mean, there's plenty of fistfights and the likes that went on with kids that didn't get along with one another, myself included at times. And, but nobody, you know, ever thought to go out to the truck and get out a gun and point it at anybody, much less pull the trigger. So something dramatic had changed in our country since that time frame. And that was the focus and the interest of this particular column. And I really think it's much more important for us to deal with the issue of why our kids want to harm themselves or others at this point in history. That didn't used to be true. And the mechanisms that someone chooses when they want to harm someone is by far a secondary issue, in my opinion, as to why they want to do it in the first place. So the column really focuses in on a number of areas that I believe have been contributing factors to why we're seeing what we're seeing in kids today. And I'd rather, as a nation and as a people, I'd much rather see us dealing with these particular issues than, you know, pretending like removing weapons from law-abiding citizens will solve criminality problems. Or, you know, wouldn't it be nice if a gun-free zone meant that a criminal couldn't carry a weapon into that zone? Instead, it only means that a law-abiding citizen cannot carry a weapon into that zone. And so all of these ideas, and Beto just left the presidential campaign yesterday, and it's not going to run for Senate or anything else, I guess. And I suspect it has a lot to do with the fact that the minute he told Americans that he was determined to go out and take guns away from law-abiding citizens and dictate what they can or cannot own or what they can or cannot do with them within the legal confines of gun ownership, I suspect that had a lot to do with why he couldn't gain any traction whatsoever in his campaign for Senate or for presidential. He needs to go find some other career path. And so does anybody else who thinks that's going to solve the problem. So, again, the column I wrote was to try to get people to focus on the root of the problem rather than some of the related symptoms of the problem.
Right. So what has changed? What has altered the mentality of our children in this country?
Well, as I mentioned, I grew up on a farm with both a mother and a father and a grandfather. And so I grew up in a very Midwest traditional type family unit. Mom and dad and my grandfather were at the kitchen table. And we settled all of our issues pretty much at the kitchen table during those time frames. I didn't come from a divided home or split home. I didn't come from some place where I only had one, the influence of a mother or a father. I had actually more influence from my grandfather growing up than I did either of my two parents, because he was around more on the farm. He kind of oversaw the boys who oversaw the farm. So it's, I think part of what's different is the breakdown of the family unit in general. It's now not only, quite normal to be raised by one parent, but you might be raised by two moms or two dads or a cluster of friends. And of course, one of Hillary Clinton's famous lines back in the 90s is it takes a village to raise a child. Well, only if the child is not in a proper home. God made it, and I am a Christian, and so I speak about things in those terms. God made it so that only one man and one woman could create a child. And I personally believe that was a wonderful design, good idea, because I personally believe it takes a mother and a father to give a child a proper raising. Now, I understand people go through difficulties in life, and sometimes it's better off that two people are apart than together and have to make do with the best they can. But I think over the last 20, 30 years in particular, 40 years, 50 years maybe since the 60s, I think we are demonstrating as a society that the only kind of kids, only kind of people a village can raise is village idiots.
Okay. We are going to our break. We will return in 3 minutes. Please stay with us. With you and me. It's
starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you.
All righty, we are back with our guest, our first guest today, and that is J.B. Williams. And in the article that you recently wrote for News with Views, you said, further gun violence is more than 10 times more likely to happen in a state with the strictest gun laws. And you can certainly say that about Chicago. People cannot buy ammunition in Chicago. They cannot buy guns in Chicago. Yet Chicago is the murder capital of the United States because criminals are always, always going to get guns. And so, as you say, states or cities, with strict gun laws, do not decrease gun violence. So what has changed since 1984? And you indicate, of course, Roe v. Wade, in 1973, which I really think is very important to our discussion today. And so tell us what you think about that. Or let's discuss this.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, first off, I think the first factor, it seems to me, in turning someone into a killer, a cold-blooded killer, the very first factor for that type of person, in my opinion, has to be a general disregard for the value of life itself, their own and others. They have to see life as expendable, something that is does not hold any particular intrinsic value. And so I bring in the column, the very first item I bring up is Roe v. Wade and abortion in the United States, because that one court opinion, it's not a law, people need to understand. There's no law passed by Congress that makes abortion legal in America. There's a court opinion dating to 1973, Roe versus Wade, where the court said essentially it's not illegal for a female to have an abortion. And if you look deeply into that case, it really wasn't about abortion. It was more about a wife's right to make decisions separate from her husband. That's what the case really revolved around, not so much abortion. But since that case, it's been used by the left to justify and legalize the senseless killing of over 61 million American children. Now, 73 is how many years ago? 36 years ago, something like that? 40 years ago, roughly? More than that, actually. It's 46. It's almost 50 years now.
Right.
And so over that last 46 years, 61 million, think about that number, the next time you see a Democrat up in rage over 10 in a mass shooting, or 20 in a mass shooting. When it's Democrats who have pushed for 46 years the senseless killing of over 61 million American children, that makes Pol Pot look reasonable. And, you know, and so that's a horrendous subject all by itself. But the net result, I think, on society during that time frame has been a degrading of the value of human life itself.
Right.
We'll see people who go to protest to save the seals or save the whales or save the trees or save the grass in their yard. But killing 61 million innocent American children is somehow not a problem. And that, there's no way to not suggest that there's no connection between that subject matter and the notion that we have a decreasing respect and regard for human life in this country. And so I don't think there's any way to separate those two things. And I think for someone to become a killer, a taker of innocent life, well, when we've done it for 46 years to the tune of 61 million, what's 10 more down at the local shopping center or at the local theater or at the local nightclub? What's 10 more? The value or devaluation of human life, I think, is an enormous factor in all of this. And I think that's been going on since Roe versus Wade. If we won't protect the most innocent amongst us, the most helpless, the most defenseless among us, and then pretend like we want to defend people by stopping them from defending themselves, by the way, by disarming them so they can't even defend themselves. And we say we're trying to defend them. That's nonsense.
Right. All righty, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back with our guest today, J.B. Williams. And I posted a couple things in the chat room during the break, and including the composition of the judges who decided that the all 50 states that Roe v. Wade legalized abortion for all 50 states, and the person, Jane Roe, never actually had an abortion, and 7 of the 9 justices, some of whom were Republicans, ruled in favor of Roe v. Wade or abortion for all 50 states. And just because somebody says it's legal doesn't mean that something is moral. The other thing, too, that I find interesting before the program is when Lacey Peterson, which was a very publicized murder in Modesto, California in 2002, was pregnant with her first child, and when they arrested her husband for her murder, Scott Peterson, that it was a crime for him to they actually said that he was convicted for first-degree murder for his wife's death and second-degree murder for the death of their unborn son, Connor. So apparently there are different applications. So it's okay if you're a doctor with a license, then you can go ahead and kill a baby that's still in utero, but it's murder, second degree or first degree murder for the death of a child, of an unborn child, when the mother to be is also murdered. So that's kind of a misapplication. It's an event situation where, well, it's just very questionable, wouldn't you say?
Well, again, you know, I've studied Roe v. Wade a number of times and written on the subject over the years. Roe v. Wade, like I said earlier, was not actually even a case about legalizing or not legalizing abortion.
Right.
It was a case about whether or not the husband had the legal power to force his wife to go one direction or the other. And the courts decided that no, even though she was his wife, he did not have that amount of power over her to decide that decision one way or another. It's other courts and politicians who then after that and activists who use that ruling to say, we can't really say that abortion is legal because there's no law legalizing it, but we can say, based on his ruling, that it's not illegal. And therefore, it's not proper for states to make it illegal. Well, as you probably know, several states have made it illegal, late-term abortion and other things over the years, and there's no way for the federal government to stop them from doing that or to overrule them on that because there's no law, federal law, making it legal. So, you know, again, most people live, unfortunately, swimming in a sea of lies, and that's one of them, is that Roe v. Wade made abortion legal. It did no such thing. In fact, the court has no such power. No matter what its opinion is or what the court case might have been about, courts can't make laws, only Congress can. So that's
all
the very
right.
First
and
line
they have,
people have to hear.
No power to enforce those laws. And so they can't make the law.
But again, my real point in the column on this isn't so much to get 100% focused on what we should do about abortion, is to talk about the results of what we've done with abortion. And the result is there's no way to separate abortion and 61 million deaths from the devaluing of human life. And that's really the point I'm making in the column.
Right. And I understand that. I just thought these other things were interesting. But some people do not understand government. They don't understand. So they just figure a lot of people have grown up with the idea that it's okay to abort their child, which is a misunderstanding of the law and of between a law and a ruling.
Right, that's correct. And so, you know, in moving through the column, I identify a number of other things. The first, you know, item listed in the column is the impact that Roe v. Wade and abortion, 61 million dead, has had on the psyche of the American population over the last 46 years. The second one, of course, is what I mentioned earlier, the breakdown of the family unit in general, the attack on the family unit itself. Again, back to the idea, Hillary Clinton's idea that a village can raise something other than village idiots, which I think the evidence is in that's not true. They raise village idiots. Mm-hmm. I can throw into that, because it's later in the column, but I can throw in right here, public education is one of the ways the village raises village idiots. You know, by the time your kid graduates high school, he can do calculus and trigonometry, but he can't balance a checkbook or tie his own shoes. And so, you know,
there are
these other elements. Or write in cursive. You know, figure out how he's going to, you know, get a minimum wage job, or make it into or through college. And so, we've got lots of contributing factors here, in my opinion, which is why I wrote this column. Item number three, I refer to the psych world itself. Well, the psych world is built around medications, medicating this and medicating that. You know, when I was a kid, every kid had ADHD, except we called it ants in their pants. And when you had ants in your pants on the farm, that just meant you got more farm work handed to you because you had too much energy. You needed to go outside and burn some still. You know, but today every kid's got, doesn't have ants in their pants or too much energy. They've got ADD and ADHD, so they need to be put on Ritalin and other drugs. And we don't really know. We're just now learning 10 years, 20 years, 30 years later, the impact those drugs have had on children again by the time they're adults. One of the things that's very common, almost 100% of the mass shooters in this country have been on some form of mind-altering drug, almost 100% of them, if not 100% of them. And most of them had diagnoses like schizophrenia or ADHD or any number of other alleged mental illnesses and had been on or were still on mind-altering drugs when the event took place. So that's another common thread in addition to the breakdown of the family unit and making the value of human life less and less every day for the average person. Now you add the psych world, which makes every victim a perpetrator and every perpetrator a victim, and puts them on drugs to solve the problem without knowing exactly what those drugs are going to do over a long period of time with these kids once they become adults. And like I said, that's a very common thread. If you go look at all the mass shooters, you're going to find that the psych world was involved with almost every one of those shooters, and so were mind-altering drugs. So I bring that up for that reason. I also talk about, you know, now that you've devalued human life and you've drugged kids up and created monsters, you still need to go a little further to get people out there killing each other in mass numbers, which means you have to make it fun to go kill people. You have to make it sexy to go kill people. How do we do that? We do that through Hollywood movies. We do it through games that are designed to desensitize kids towards killing by playing games online or at home, you know, umpteen hours a day, where the game is built around killing other people and watching blood splatter on the screen. And so now we've devalued human life, we've dumbed down society, we've drugged it up, and now, with the help of Hollywood, we're going to make killing other people sexy by way of movies and games. And so, when I was growing up, Pong first came out. The video game Pong came out. Two sticks and a little ball bouncing back and forth that really didn't have much control over, but it seemed like a really cool game at the time. But today, with the visual arts capabilities that Hollywood has, it's extremely realistic. If you've never seen any of these games, you should see them for yourself and look at what these kids are sitting in their room for hours and hours and hours, sometimes online with people all around the world, practicing it, killing people. Go ahead, dear.
Right. Hollywood's militarization of entertainment and the commercialization of war are really not new. But, as you say, today's trigger-happy gamer has the choice of hundreds of similar titles playing virtual violence as entertainment. And that is training, because this commercial logic of using video games for training is reflected in growing profits for game companies, while the military logic of relying on recruits primed on violent games coheres with the new emphasis on lethality. So the kill rate between World War II and the Vietnam War increased because soldiers were more accustomed to shooting people, because that's the way that they were trained through the through Hollywood, and through Hollywood working together with the gaming community.
Even in military training, what do? You want to be a fighter pilot? Well, we're not going to put you in a multi-million-dollar plane. We're going to put you in a few million-dollar simulator first.
Right.
Okay. So what these games are is they're open market killing simulators. That's what they are.
Right.
And it allows children to practice and get good at and desensitized to killing. Now, is that by itself responsible for mass killings? Probably not. But we're starting to stack some factors up here, aren't we? A disregard for human life after 61 million killed by abortion, the breakdown of the family unit to where kids are often latchkey kids because they only have one parent. That parent has to work outside the home in order to keep the roof over their heads. So they're raising themselves. What are they doing while they're raising themselves? Their homework? No, they're online playing video games with their friends, learning how to become proficient at killing people.
Right.
So we're beginning to stack these factors up, one on top of the other. And the next item I talk about in the column is what does a young person have to look forward to today? They're coming out of high school. They maybe can or can't get into college. if they can get into college, they're building up college debt while they do it. They're being told by the Democrats that they'll never make it on their own in this world. The government is going to have to feed them cradle to grave. They're going to have to provide for free education, provide for free health care, provide for free food, free this, free that. Why? Well, because you'll never be able to make it through this world on your own, Susie and Jimmy and Johnny. That's why. And so now we've desensitized them about the value of life. We desensitized them towards killing. We put them in killing simulators for years. Okay? We drugged them up, dumbed them down, and now we're telling them, every time a Democrat gets on a campaign stage today, they tell them what? Don't trust the cops. Don't trust your parents or grandparents. Trust your teacher and your professors, even though they're getting arrested right and left for their misbehaviors in the classroom or outside the classroom. Trust the government. Trust the village who raises village idiots. Trust Hollywood. But just know that we're preparing you for a world that you could never make it in on your own. So don't worry about it. If you elect us, we'll make sure you don't have to. We'll make sure you have everything your little heart desires. Just like we gave you a trophy. Just because we gave you, just the same way we gave you a trophy for participating in soccer, even though you never actually got on the field. And so this is what we're doing. And it's, you know, and then just to make sure that nobody can fight back, we want to demonize legal gun owners. We want to demonize the people that are sitting in church on Sunday. We want to demonize the people who still believe in a traditional family unit. And we want to glorify everything that is awful in this world. Anyhow, go ahead.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They're doing this out of fear. They're instilling fear in our children and expecting them to, those that do go to school and do want to perform at their best, when other children in the same classroom do not have to do their best, people who produce more effort and make an effort should be rewarded for that effort. And those who fail to put their efforts into something should not be rewarded with the same rewards, the same enhancements as the people who actually try. So what it does, it makes the people who really want to be competitive and who want to move ahead are really, it doesn't make any difference because, as you say, everybody that plays on the soccer team, whether they ever get on the field or not, is going to get a trophy. So it's really a very sad situation. And, it is Marxism, as you said, or
it
as
is.
You've written.
It is. And it's very sad. And today I saw just this past week a Gallup, I believe it was, survey that said now 70% of young people believe in socialism. That's astonishing.
Right. Right. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Back, and our guest the first hour and a half today is J.B. Williams. His website is patriotsunion.org, and we are discussing something that appeared in an article at News with Views. And one of the things, too, that the children who go to college, if they are unable to pay their college debt, which has increased dramatically over the last several years, then the taxpayer, it's up to the taxpayer to pay that debt off. And so that is impacting not only just a single college graduate, but it is impacting all the taxpayers. because they are left with the debt that the student, the graduate, is now unable to afford because it has gone so high. Correct?
That is correct. And, you know, again, I'm a look for the root of the problem sort of person and look for the solution. I don't believe solutions exist where we don't have a root of the problem yet.
Right.
And so in the case that you're referring to with college tuitions, why does tuition cost what it costs today?
Right.
In the first place. And the answer to that is government again and their involvement in education, even at the college level. And so it's a big cycle, frankly, of money being moved from the private sector multiple ways through multiple mechanisms, college education being one of them, being moved from the private sector through that system and through that funnel, if you will, back to government one way or the other.
And through the locals. The local mm-hmm. systems, you know, with the federal the federal government has taken over education with the Department of Education. It used
well,
to be left,
a,
left to the states.
They have a theory. Yeah, they have a theory. And again, this is the cycle I'm talking about, part of it. They have this theory that anything that involves federal funding, and of course a federal student loan is considered by the federal government to be federal funding. Anything that involves federal funding, the government has a right to mandate the use of those funds. And so that's how they gain control of the education system and a whole lot of other things, besides the education system, is anything that they say, federal dollars goes into, the federal government has a right to mandate. Keep in mind that before the federal government can hand out a dollar to anyone for anything, they have to first take it from you and or your state. Or your state. So they take it from you in the first place against your will, and then when they give it back in the form of a student loan or funding, federal funding for state interest, or it comes with strings attached now. There was no strings attached when they took it from you, but now there's going to be federal strings attached when they put it back into circulation. And then that's exactly how government continues to grow into this monster that nobody really can control anymore. Anyway, that's a topic for a whole nother day.
Right. Okay, so let's continue. Public indoctrination, and certainly they are being indoctrinated. Okay, we are at the top of the hour. We will be back momentarily.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest the first hour and a half today is J.B. Williams. His website is PatriotsUnion.org, and he's written a very informative article at News with Views, which we are going through, and the name of that is Why U.S. Children Are Killing. And he has several items that he is discussing that are very very accurate and very incriminating and certainly just really very troubling. It is very troubling, and you talk about the 61 million people who have been murdered via abortion, and 61 lives. That's incredible. 61.
You know, people sometimes get offended when I say murder, but the definition of murder by law is the taking of an innocent life, not in self-defense, meaning there, right. I had no reason, no right to take it. There were no threat to me.
Right.
One way or the other. And it was an innocent life. It wasn't someone who was involved in a criminal act or a capital murder case or any of that. It's the most innocent and defenseless among us. And based on how we treat them, why would we treat anybody else any better? That's really the point.
Great question. Great question. Life has been devalued. That one ruling by the Supreme Court has devalued life everywhere.
And, you know, people say it's legal. No, it's not legal. First off, the court's ruling is just a ruling. Secondly, the case wasn't actually about abortion. It was about whether or not the husband had the power over the wife or not. And again, the other side of all these arguments, they always frame things in a lie. Do you support women's rights? Well, of course I support women's rights, but I don't think that a woman's right includes the right to kill her own child. And in fact, we put women in prison for that every day in this country, but
right.
Only after the child's born. But what about, you brought up Scott Peterson. What about Scott Peterson? He killed a child and went to prison before it was born. And
right.
So he was convicted of killing a child before it was born. So we seem to want to have our cake and eat it too here.
Right.
When it comes to equal application of law. And again, there is no equal application of law in anything that is highly politicized. And today everything is highly politicized.
Right.
So it's a bizarre, frightening world that we find ourselves in right now. And people ask me all the time, what can I do about it? And the answer I have for you is by yourself, there's nothing you can do about it, because individually, none of us have the power to change anything beyond what's happening at the most in our own lives. And at some point, once all this gets far enough down the road, we won't even have the power to change our own lives, much less anything else. And so, you know, the first thing, if you're someone who's concerned about what's going on in this country, you can't do anything about any of it unless you're going to gather together with others of like mind and begin to sort your way through, looking for the root cause of issues, looking for the solutions that don't just treat the symptoms, but that can cure the illness. And that's why I wrote this column after 2 years of sitting on the sidelines and not writing any columns. And, you know, when it comes to where we're at today in this country, we're experiencing a very deep circumstance of, I think, mental, psychological, and moral illness in this country, that if we don't figure out how to deal with it, we're not going to have a country soon, in my opinion.
Indeed.
And you know, people are very quick to blame politicians, and I like blaming politicians just the same as everybody else. But the fact is, none of those politicians exist without a voter. And so we've got to, once again, the corruption and the criminality in our political systems and in our governments is the result of corruption inside American voters. If American voters were not voting for corruption, we wouldn't have corruption. And the sad truth is half the people doing that don't even know that's what they're doing. But go ahead.
Right. It's it is a terrible thing that is occurring, and very troubling, as you say. And people are programmed. In fact, there are some people that continue to believe, despite the evidence and despite the lack of evidence, they are stating that a lot of these shootings are hoaxes and that they were, done by crisis actors. And usually that's a product of consensus thinking where they have listened to someone come out within 12 hours or just a few hours of a mass shooting and saying, oh, these people were just acting, it's a hoax, and it's a crisis actor situation, or it's a drill. Let me tell you, they are not going to have a drill, and I only have studied Sandy Hook, I have not studied in depth the other shootings, but they are not going to do a drill at an elementary school, Sandy Hook Elementary, with elementary children, when there is a great reluctance to do any kind of a drill among high school students simply for the fact that it is too traumatic. The other thing, too, is that if it were a hoax or a drill, with every commandment or everything that is said, the person participating in the drill has to say, this is only a drill. They also have to get the permission of the children's parents. Now, I can verify for certain that the children involved with the Sandy Hook school shooting their parents would never have signed such an egregious document to put their children through any kind of a drill that was so horrifying and so traumatic. That is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard. And people who believe that these events are hoaxes simply are using consensus thinking, or they're simply not thinking at all. That's my rant.
Well, you know, everybody today is familiar with the term fake news. Trump made that a very popular term.
Right.
Popularized term, I should say. And it's true. CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, that's why you're doing the show you're doing on the network you're doing it, is because the main, quote-unquote, news networks are no longer in the news business. They're in the creating tabloid headline businesses, and they're in the business of controlling public sentiment in order to control the direction of the nation and the sentiments of the voters. And so, the result of fake news in the mainstream has been a plethora of independent networks popping up and websites popping up, everything from the 4chan and 8chan, and the QAnon nonsense, and, you know, with 110,000, 116,000 sealed indictments. Let me tell you, you couldn't prosecute 116,000 people in this country over the next 100 years if your life depended on it. And so if you were interested in prosecuting anyone, you'd have to start with one or two or ten long before you build a list of 110,000 sealed indictments. It's all nonsense. But what's happened is fake news in the mainstream has caused people to look to create their own versions of the news. And once again, most of the people are ill-equipped to do that, even if they're well-intended. And most people are not well-intended. They, too, are trying to control the dialogue out there. They're trying to get people to focus on what they want them focused on. When I talk about this, I talk about Mark Levin and his 11 amendments to the Constitution and his Article 5. Mark Levin is well aware. He's no constitutional expert to begin with. But despite not being a constitutional expert or having ever practiced law before in his life, he knows that his book about amending the Constitution through a state convention is false. It's fake. It's not true. It can't be done. Not in a million years could it ever be done. But let's assume he was right. Why would anybody bother to try to amend a Constitution that everybody already disregards? You know, it's like painting a room that you're never going to go back into. Why bother?
Right.
And it's ridiculous. And by the way, Mark, you know, Mark is not Thomas Jefferson. He's not, Adams. He's not George Washington. I would want somebody way above myself, a lot smarter than Mark Levin, if we were going to attempt to amend what the founders created. And in my opinion, we've amended it too many times already. If we're going to do anything to change it, we need to repeal some amendments at this point. But my point in saying all that is this. Why does Mark want people focused on what cannot be done? And the answer should be obvious to people. It's because it will keep you from focusing on that which could be done.
Interesting. Certainly. Yes.
Why do people want to talk about guns? You know, I pulled up for our conversation today, I pulled up FBI statistics on deaths in the United States. And death by firearm is tiny. It's 1/4 suicide of young people. It's 1/4. Okay? It's not even on the radar compared to abortion. And even if you want to dig into gun violence, 70%+ of gun deaths are by a handgun, not by an AR-15 or an AK-47. Less than 2% involve anything like that, any kind of weapon like that. And when somebody says assault weapon, well, I guarantee you the Louisville Slugger I've got out in the garage is an assault weapon, if that's what I want it to be.
Right.
The butcher knife on my kitchen counter is an assault weapon, if that's what I want it to be.
Right.
So let's talk about reality here. Reality is, it doesn't matter what mechanism someone chooses to harm themselves or someone else. The real issue is, why are they doing it? And I think I discuss reasons in my column, at least in my opinion, from a common sense approach and not some PhD, you know, mental, you know, I almost said mental midget, and I probably should have, trying to figure out the obvious. The obvious is there's no regard for human life. The obvious is we've been dumbed down and drugged up. The obvious is we've been training kids to kill in simulated circumstances by the television screen and the movie screen and the gaming screens for decades now. And all of a sudden, 46 years later, we're shocked that they are out there killing each other and themselves. How in the world could we be shocked by that outcome?
Yes. Actually, the figures show, too, that you're more apt to be killed by allopathic medicine than you are by a handgun.
And that's true. The fact is doctors in the United States kill more people by far than guns do. So are we going to outlaw doctors?
Right. Exactly. And just the programming. It has not been, it's been very incremental. That they went from Father Knows Best and some of those earlier programs where the man of the family was the man of the family. He wasn't autocrat. He had a certain purpose and a certain function. And now, I note that, the commercials often show the man doing the laundry. And I'm thinking, what the heck? They're really trying to promote something here. The commercials especially are so telling. They're promoting
so many things
that were just not even talked about before. Promoting dating sites where men can meet men or women can meet women. So that if we go back to your original premise that the basic unit of society is under attack, you're absolutely correct in that regard. Absolutely. And the TV
and,
news,
you know, years ago.
Go ahead.
You know, 25 years ago when I used to say this, callers would call in screaming at me on the phone, females. But today when I say this in an interview somewhere, they go, you're absolutely right. And what I used to say, and I still say the same thing, okay, and I'm married with children. I told you what kind of home I grew up in at the beginning of the show. When I first heard women wanted to be equal to men, I laughed. I absolutely laughed about it. And then I realized they were serious, and I found it to be quite troubling and sad, because the truth is, in order for a woman to be equal to a man, you would have to lower yourselves to our level. You would have to lower yourselves to be equal to a man in this world. What was a man's job? Hunter and gatherer. Hunter and gatherer, that's it. Sire, hunter, gatherer. That's our job. What was a woman's job? To raise the next generation of decent human beings. Is there a more important job on the planet than that one?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But in order to be equal to a man, you're going to have to lower yourselves to get to where we're at. You don't go up to get to us. You have to come down to get to us. And 25 years ago when I first started saying that, I'd have callers call in, females mad at me for saying that because they thought I was insulting them. Well, I am insulting you in a way. If you're stupid enough to think you want to be equal to me, then you're not too bright. You have to come right down to get to me.
And
you have to come down.
You're talking about the mainstream media, and it's also very important that we recognize that in the so-called alternative, quote-unquote, alternative media, that there are people who are promoting fake news and fake stories and providing just such poor evidence. Because there's consensus thinking among the population. Loners, critical thinkers in a classroom are not going to raise their hand and be out of sync with the other people in that classroom. Consensus thinking is, well, it's a herd mentality, and people don't want to be different. They want to go along with what other people who are just as stupid as they are just as ignorant as they are, and not raise any questions. And so, a lot of people in the people in the alternative media who are really promoting fake news, as well as in the so-called mainstream.
That's absolutely a fact. And people, again, and again, one of the references that sometimes people take offense to is when I say the nation has been Pavlov trained. Pavlov was famous for his studies in animal behavior and in dog training and developing dog training techniques. You roll over, you get a treat. You sit, when I say sit, you get a treat. Well, the Americans and the people act exactly in the same way they've been Pavlov trained. Exactly the same way.
Perfect example. We will be right back with our guest.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. To change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you.
Alrighty, we are back with our first guest today, J.B. Williams, and you have defined the problem, and you've also given some solutions, which is great.
Well, you know, every solution, every problem begins with the people, and so does every solution. Let me put it that way. None of the problems we see today would exist if the people didn't allow them to exist. And if inaction, which I believe is the case, is the biggest culprit, inaction over many years by the American people is what created this problem. If inaction is the problem, then action is the solution. But you can't just act by yourself. By yourself, you, me, no one has that kind of power. You have to gather together with others of like mind. You have to dig to the root cause of something, and you have to work together to address it at the root cause. Don't treat symptoms, treat illnesses. And we have a lot of illnesses in this country right now, and they all exist out of apathy largely. There's a lot of people in this country who want to see it all fixed, but they're hoping somebody else will do the fixing. And that's not how you fix things.
Exactly. You have to take an interest in what's going on. And so often, I know this is a kind of a cop-out, parents are not devoting the parenting time to their children as they used to, or they have not prepared, they don't have a grandfather that is stepping in. My grandmother lived across the street from us and down half a block when I was growing up. My other grandparents took interest in me and their grandchildren. And now you don't have the interaction between family members that you used to have. People are stepping outside of their own families and developing social contacts through the social media, which is a totally false. People are not going to post their failures in social media. They're going to post their successes. It's an unrealistic society that we are living in when you think you can have a new friend simply because you say, select this new friend because this friend knows another friend who knows another friend. No, you need family. You need the family unit to act and function as a family unit. You need a father and a mother. And certainly there are cases of divorce, which is also very more common than it should be. People are not working out their difficulties. Instead, they're escaping them because it's been promoted.
Again,
go ahead.
You know, again, what does divorce teach the children in a divorce situation? It teaches the children immediately when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. In other words, out the door. They don't sit and figure it out. And
right.
So that's what the child learns from that and from that circumstance. And so you're absolutely right. And you know, my kids are grown now. My daughter is a teacher, and she was over at the house the other day, and we were talking about her kids. And I said, you know, I was very proud of how she handles her kids. In fact, her parents are extremely proud of how she handles their kids. And I said, let me ask you a question. I said, between growing up, your friends' influences, school's influences, church's influences, television's influences, everything that went on in your lives growing up in my home, in my wife and I's home, what do you think was the single most positive impact in your life out of all the different influences? And she thought about it for a minute, and she said, the kitchen table.
Yes, the kitchen table was a place together. Yes.
And
it
one thing,
was.
You know, we're all busy people. I mean, ever since they, you know, started taxing you into poverty in this country, every home needs a two-income household now, pretty much. So we're
right.
All busy people, but we can never be too busy for our kids. One thing that my wife and I focused on was we made it a mandatory that we'd be together for dinner and evening, even if it had to be 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night, by the time we could actually sit down together.
That's wonderful.
And we made that mandatory, and the payoff came 25 years later when you're watching what's coming out of your own kids and you go, yes, that I'm proud of. Where'd you get that from? And they say the kitchen table. They didn't get it from church. They didn't get it from school. They didn't get it from their friends or their friends' parents or any other influence, television or anything else. They got it from the kitchen table. And families, if they want to raise good human beings and good citizens in this country, they're going to have to do it at the kitchen table. They cannot rely on anybody else to do it anywhere.
Right. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the program today, and I thank you for writing this article and for visiting with us today. Thank you so much. Take care.
It's been a real pleasure, Dina. Take care, dear.
All righty. Bye-bye. Stay tuned. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.